by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. It is another week of Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoor Turkey Talk.
And it's not even Thanksgiving.
I'm telling you, Janet, it's always Thanksgiving in this town. The turkeys arrive at your neighbor's house and they have parties.
I think you're right. Or so maybe it's always not Thanksgiving in Casper. They're always happy as can be because they know life is good.
You know, I was just talking to some folks the other day, and they come to town to visit their dad, and he lives up at the base of Casper Mountain, and the turkey population there, he says that his dad's house has turkey crap all over the roof, all over the area, and it just is kind of a pain in their butt, and they're not sure what to do. But Brandon, I know because of the population in Casper, you guys know what to do, and you've been doing it. And that's trapping those turkeys.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, Drew. So since Joe Sandrini, the Newcastle wildlife biologist, he retired, I took over as the state's wild turkey chair. So my wife calls me the state's turkey gobbler. So we have a turkey committee in this state, and we do a lot of like trapping and relocating guidelines and a bunch of different things along with that. So yeah. The bird numbers, they're up again. We did brood counts for the first time this year. The poult production was 4 poults per hen. That's an indicator that the population's going up. But I haven't had as many calls in town as I typically do. But I still get quite a few of them.
Yeah, that's just because maybe they're complaining to someone else besides Brandon.
Well, and I wonder, are they just used to it at this point where they're able to adapt to those turkeys being here?
Well, I don't know that you can adapt to those turkeys being here. You know, I grew up down in the Big Tree area, and I'll tell you, like I was down there the other day, and the amount of, like you say, kind of damage and destruction to some of those neighborhoods, or just the amount of crap that is left by those turkeys is almost unmanageable for some of those houses, depending on if they're roosting near you, or, you know, if they just gobble through your houses or your yard as they're moving towards their roost. But it can be really destructive in a lot of places. And I'm not sure that people necessarily see that. They see the inconvenience of making you late getting your kid to school if you're driving on 12th Street or 13th and, you know, kind of those areas. So it is. It's kind of a tough thing.
Oh, and I'll tell you that the other day I was stopped in traffic by a turkey traffic out on East 2nd Street. So I was near Hat 6 Road. And there was a flock of turkeys, and everybody was stopped, and people were honking and taking pictures, and it's like they're almost celebrities in town.
Oh, yeah.
They are. They definitely are. And you know, we talk about this all the time, that Thomas Gobble has definitely left his mark on Casper, and all of those Toms that are around are definitely his children that are wreaking havoc on us and reminding us that they can be little jerks sometimes. They, you know, definitely can cause issues. I know people don't see this as the celebrity side, but when they used to chase the little kids with a backpack, oh, that was a riot. I mean, for me, because I was the little kid in the backpack. But, you know, it is. It's definitely something that we want to make sure that we're looking at all aspects. We recognize they can be the celebrities, but there's also the other side of it.
Well, Brandon, I know that you have a lot on your plate now, especially being in that chair with the turkey, you know, council. Is it the turkey council? Are you on the chair of the turkey council?
Yeah. I think we can call it the Turkey Council. That might be a new name. That you are you the chair of the Turkey Council?
Yeah.
See, there you go. So gobble gobble turkey.
No, and it's funny we're having this conversation this morning because I probably smell like turkey feces because I was out trapping some turkeys this morning and we caught a few over on Walnut, kind of by Dean Morgan. So pretty exciting stuff coming from the National Wild Turkey Federation. We partnered with them to get some money from them. We put in some of our own funds to get a new wild turkey trap that we are really excited about because it's a lot more mobile. We can use it in people's yards. Before, we had a huge 60-foot by 60-foot drop net, hard to use in this Casper wind that we have. So it just looks like a big live trap. And honestly, as we're sitting right here, if some turkeys went into it, I got a trail camera on it. Couldn't it send me a notification to my phone? I can hit a button on my phone and drop the door on the turkeys. So wow. It's pretty exciting stuff.
And then the turkeys get to wander around and continue to eat that fantastic bait that they laid down to trap them until the guys can get there and safely put them in some. It's odd. They're actually cardboard boxes that we use to transport them. And we load them into those cardboard boxes. We put them in a horse trailer and we take them to their new home.
Yeah. And the boxes are specifically a turkey box, also provided by the National Wild Turkey Federation.
Fantastic breathing holes you get to look through and make sure they're doing great, and they really do. It's amazing. Oddly enough, it's amazing the science that goes into a cardboard box.
Yep. And it, just like Jana talked about, you know, when the door drops on them, they are really calm. So I watched, this is the first time we use it. I watched when the door dropped this morning and the birds like, what happened? But like, yeah, let's just go and keep eating. So they're really relaxed till we get up to the trap by them. So you might see this trap around town. We have some signs on it. It says, please avoid. If you have any questions, it's got my number on it. You can call. But yeah, just please, please stay away from the trap if you see it out.
You know, so none of us were alive when turkey was introduced into Wyoming. Not a native bird. What was it like in the 50s or 40s, 50s in there? They kind of traded. I believe it was grouse of some
sort to
New Mexico. And then, you know, now the population of turkey in Wyoming, I mean, gosh, it's got to be pretty large throughout the state, isn't it, Brandon?
Yeah, we're seeing turkeys show up in places that we've never seen them before. It's pretty remarkable. We've had 2 or 3 years of really good production. I don't know how long this is going to last, but we are in a turkey boom right now. So if you're ever going to get into turkey hunting or anything, this is the time to do it.
You know, you talk about dealing with the National Turkey Federation, and what a great organization that, you know, the numbers have kind of dwindled down here in Wyoming now, but that's making a resurgence, and, you know, Game and Fish working hand in hand with that just because of the population and the popularity of the turkey industry here.
You know, and that's right. And once again, Drew, like, I cannot give enough thanks to the National Wild Turkey Federation across the state for the donation that they did make for this trap. I mean, the excitement that the guys have had here in the office to really be able to safely manage the wild turkey population, you know, in the town of Casper and surrounding areas has really been rejuvenating. I think that oftentimes, you know, it's frustrating when, you know, there's that feeding ban in town, but people continually do feed. And, you know, there's a lot of negatives that come along with that. And so this gives them yet another tool to really manage that. And there's an excitement to provide more hunting opportunities and more wildlife watching opportunities, really, to those kind of in the surrounding areas to kind of trap and relocate, get them to some new areas around town. And so it's exciting. And so a huge thanks again to the National Wild Turkey Federation, both locally and statewide, have really been huge. You know, those guys are out there with, you know, Brandon and his crew trapping. Like this morning when it was cold, chilly and windy, they were out there right beside doing all the work. And so that's really exciting for us.
Yeah. And go on their website, National Wild Turkey Federation, poke around. If you want to become a member, that's great. Just there's new leadership here in Casper, and they're really excited, really ambitious. So it's just a fun way for a bunch of like-minded folks to get together.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Brandon. Hang on just a second. Let's talk more about turkeys. And trapping is one of the things that's been on people's mind for the last couple of years. We'll get to it in just minutes.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Back in Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors, Janet Millick, along with Brandon Werner from Wyoming Game and Fish Department, along with me, Drew, your host of the show every week. You can always listen to our episodes on demand at the radio station's app. Turkey's a big problem. Brandon, we were talking about it, how the 60-foot net was quite the, really, operation. It took a lot of hands. Is the new way, is that a little easier?
Yeah, so this morning was the first time we used it. There's definitely some kinks we need to work out. I would say right now it's doable with three, probably four with this new trap. But as I kind of adjust it and stuff, my goal is to have just three people. But when I use that 60-foot by 60-foot net, which I'll still use, like it's an 8-10 person thing minimum. So it's just a lot more difficult to set up and everything. Just like this morning, we had a little malfunction with the trap. We had some birds go in it. I dropped it. They escaped. I set the door back up. Half hour later, we had birds go back in it and drop the door. So we couldn't have done that with the big net.
So just in case people don't have a visual of what we used to do versus what we're doing now, this 60-foot net used to have a high center pole. And so this pole would kind of hold it up and it looked kind of like a circus tent. You know, it was clear. It was a net. You couldn't see it. But then we baited the turkeys under. And when we dropped that, so we had this big long string that we pulled because the remote drop never worked. So we always had to pull this net. Release, and it would drop down on top of the turkeys and it would kind of trap them underneath this net. So then all the people would run out and you would want to carefully roll back the net and lift those turkeys, you know, out from underneath it safely. And so each one of those turkeys was kind of trapped under the net. And so we worked fast and furious to make sure that there was no harm to the turkeys. We didn't want them, you know, struggling or anything along those lines. So that manpower piece of it was huge. Well, now we still have that manpower piece because we don't want to, you know, leave them in a stressful situation or anything for much time. But like Brandon was saying, now they're still kind of, they're trapped in this big box. They're not trapped in the sense of there's nothing sitting on top of them. They're still wandering around and eating mm-hmm. while our guys are kind of going in and putting them in these boxes.
Yeah. The downside is I can't quite catch as many at a time. Yeah. But just the mobility and being able to use it in smaller spaces and being able to trap kind of all day is where the benefits are really going. So.
When you use the new trap, how many times per session will you have new birds in that trap? If you catch, say, 5 or 6 at one time, within a few minutes, could you have more?
Well, we'll have to see because they do kind of get hesitant. Like this morning after we did get our good catch. The first catch that the birds got out, they just kind of hung around there. But the second time when the birds in the trap kind of flapped around a little bit, they got kind of nervous. So I'm not for sure on that. I think if we had some smaller groups of turkeys, I think we could catch them continually throughout the day. But in the winter right now, when we're in this big megawad, it's kind of difficult. They get smart, kind of get educated. But I'll be curious when they start coming back in the trap, if they come back in this afternoon or tomorrow morning or what.
So last year, well over 100 birds were trapped and relocated. What's mm-hmm. your goal for this year?
You know, I don't have a goal for a specific number of birds, but I want to target some hotspot areas where I'm getting a lot of calls. So around Dean Morgan School, around Hilltop Bank or St. Patrick's Church, those areas are really where I want to target. But the birds over by Hilltop, they're kind of giving me the slip because they're moving around quite a bit. So I kind of am asking the public, like, if you know where these birds are roosting, to let me know. Because I get quite a few calls like, oh, the turkeys came through my yard. That doesn't help me a lot because where they're roosting is really where they're spending the most time. So I can bait them in close to those areas. And that's the most efficient way for us. So if you're having issues in town, you know where these birds are roosting in the trees, let us know.
Are you able to monitor how those turkey populations in the areas where you're moving them, are they taking to their new locations? Are they able to grow there?
Yeah. So do we actively monitor them? Do I go out there specifically looking for turkeys? A little bit. Not like we don't have a set schedule or anything like that. We really rely upon landowners. And two, if we're game and fish personnel are out there, each turkey we release has a band on its leg. So we can like glass it up and be like, oh, yep, that one's got a band. So pretty interesting thing this summer. I went out and saw a bird and like, oh, that hen's got a band on it. Oh, she's got 4 little poults with her. So apparently this worked, you know. So it's pretty exciting to see those things. You know, if a hunter harvests one or I had a turkey get hit on a road that had a band, they can call in and let us know where these birds went and everything like that. So it helps us distribute, know where these birds are distributing to and how they're doing with the bands on them.
And Brandon, before we go, there are a couple of things that I want, because when people listen to this show, they're listening a lot of times because maybe they don't know a lot about the outdoors, or they're trying to get into the outdoors, or maybe they don't know terminology. So when you say roost, what does that mean specifically, and how can someone tell where they're roosting?
Yeah, so roosting is essentially where a turkey sleeps. So it's most of the time in trees, sometimes it might be on houses downtown and stuff like that. But essentially in the evening, about a half hour before last light, they'll fly up into a tree and they'll spend the night there because that's where they're safe and everything. And then in the morning, they'll fly out about daylight or about a half hour before daylight. So that is what the roost means.
And they continually go back to the same area time after time after time.
Especially in the winter.
Yes. And yeah. So you're seeing, you know, a lot of these areas are getting, that's when we talk about like the destructiveness is really with this repetitive, you know, if they're just blowing through, you're not going to notice. But the repetitive use of these roosts is really where, you know, the feces really pile up and the feathers and, you know, all of this stuff really kind of gets there. And it's hard for the landowners, whether it be the owner of the house on the corner or, you know, the owner of a greenhouse in the middle of the county that gets that destroyed. It makes a big difference.
And if someone comes in contact, Janet, you kind of joked about the kids getting attacked, but are turkeys dangerous and can they harm humans?
You know, it depends on the time of the year. When they're a little bit more aggressive during, you know, mating season, that is when they kind of are like, hey, you know, I'm going to herd you. I'm going to move around. I'm going to see what you are, or stay out of my territory. You know, those sorts of actions are when they're a little bit more aggressive. They do have a spur on their foot that can cause a little bit of damage if they are able to get close to you. But other than that,
it's,
you know,
rare. It's super, super rare.
It's more scary than it is anything. And, you know, Thomas Gobbles was a little bit more aggressive than 99% of the turkeys that will run from you. He was the one that would kind of chase you down and flap his wings and kind of go for you. But not all of them do that. They are a little bit more watching. But I will say, I have tried to venture from my aunt's house, who lives across the street from my mom and dad, who are in prime turkey habitat. And it has taken a half an hour to walk across the street at times because they're not having it, right? They're getting close to you. They're flapping their wings. And it's like, okay, this can be a little bit frustrating. So it is a real adventure sometimes.
They're birds. They're not that big, but they're still intimidating with the way that the way they present themselves sometimes.
Dude, I think half of the birds out there are my size. I really like, there's a little bit of intimidation when they're like a little bit above my waist. So yes, absolutely.
You know, you mentioned the spur, and this is a totally off the Casper subject, but when my dad went through the police academy and was a 30-year cop, and his roommate and he stayed to be best friends. They're still to this day. This has been 40 years ago at this point. But they were hunting buddies as well. And the only person that I have ever met in my life that has had to go to the emergency room because of a turkey spur is my dad's hunting buddy. It's just four stitches and a great story.
Yeah. You know, here in Game and Fish, we always like to keep blackmail on our employees of fun hunting photos or those sorts of things. And I legit have about 5 pictures of gentlemen who have retired from the agency where they're, you know, black eyes, scars on their faces, all sorts of things, because they did get into a wrestling match with some turkeys and maybe the turkey won. And so it is pretty true that they're tough. And so that does make them fun, but you know, we're trying.
You know, and that's the one of the great parts about it. And like I mentioned, you know, we do these shows informative. So Brandon, we appreciate you sitting and giving us all that information and getting out there. And when people call, you don't just like send them the voicemail and never talk back to them. You always will communicate with the people.
Oh, for sure. That's something I really pride myself on is trying to get back to everybody that calls. And there's some ways that we can mitigate, you know, if turkeys are coming through your yard or just staging there for a while, that we can get them off of your property. But, you know, there's several people that are like, well, can you trap in the summertime? You know, we usually don't with poults and stuff like that. But the wintertime, now's the time to be trapping. So give us a call if you're having some issues. But, yeah, let us know if you know where they're roosting would be the most helpful.
All right. Janet, Brandon, thank you guys so much, and keep a good work up.
Right. Thanks, Drew.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew along with Brian Woodward from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And, man, Brian, we've had winter show up over the last few days. We had that really cold snap, and some snow's been falling.
Yeah, and of course the big W followed it. So we've got drifting snow, and the wind chill was pretty tough on some guys. But we made some ice.
Did make ice, which is going to be great for the Derby, which is going on this weekend or next weekend. And
well, right now
today.
Today finishes up the Glendale Derby, and lots of good prizes being given out at the trading post. And so if you we're part of that. I mean, hopefully you did well on the ice as well. But then next week is the Pathfinder Hog Derby.
Hog Derby, yeah. And I saw that there was quite a few people that showed up over at Boyson, too. So it looked like some kids were really pulling some fish out of that lake.
Yeah, and I think the Pathfinder Hog Derby, I think that's going to be a good one. Of course, we're selling the raffle tickets here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. They have an adult ticket and they have a youth ticket. They switched that up so that the youth has a reduced price. But they have got a ton of prizes because remember last year they canceled the Derby.
Oh, yeah.
And so they kept all those prizes that they were going to be using last year, and they rolled it forward to this year. So the hourlies and the door prizes are going to be fantastic this year.
So looking at the forecast, which you can't really, you know, and like we say, you can't plan anything on the weather because it could change on a dime. Mm-hmm. But looking ahead, it's going to be cold. It's going to be in the 30s, maybe in the teens, you know, in the early morning is going to be early. So being prepared for that multiple level of cold is something that a lot of guys are up to. And I saw a couple of our buddies on Facebook that are out this weekend getting ready for that. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're linking up some of their ice huts and getting the heaters out there.
Yeah, as long as you can break that wind and, you know, the Mr. Buddy heater in there, it's going to make things really enjoyable.
My wife said the other day, she's like, I can't believe people get out and they camp on the ice. And, you know, and a lot of times, I'm sure it's going to be cold, but like you said, if you got that buddy heater, you got a good sleeping bag, and you've got that wind break, like that cuts a lot of the cool out of it.
A lot of guys will bring a camp stove, you know, they'll prepare a pot of chili or stew at home and, you know, just bring it on there, throw it on there to heat it up, or a jet boil, you know, bring some Mountain House or some Peak Refuel, and, you know, putting a little warmness in your body goes a long ways.
It sure does. And I'm telling you, you can get all that stuff here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And something else we talked about, you guys have the applications here or the tickets here, and that's the walleye banquet, which is coming up in April.
Yeah, April 12th, the North Platte Walleye's All-You-Can-Eat Walleye Banquet is going to be being held at the Industrial Building this year. So, yeah, we do have tickets here available at the store, so come see me, give me a call. We'll be reaching out to all the sponsors in the past or all the people that have purchased tables here in the next couple weeks.
And I know you were at an event there this week, the Bubbles and Beans, which was at the the building there on the fairgrounds.
Right.
And it's a good location for a lot of people. And that's kind of one of the things that was restrictive with, you know, the other location that you were at.
Yeah, you know, I think the Industrial Building is held, you know, for the biker ball. I think they seated almost 800 people in there. So it will give us the opportunity to, you know, not turn people away this year that, you know, we've had to do in the last couple of years. So hopefully we'll have plenty of seating for everybody. And, you know, the money goes to a great cause. You know, 100% of the money stays in Wyoming. We're doing all the kids' fishing programs, fishing poles for school programs. We're doing life jacket loaner programs. We got a scholarship up at Casper College. And then we're looking for big projects with the Game and Fish, you know, to try to enhance walleye fishing throughout the state. So it's one of the, one of my passionate causes that I think it's actually, you know, one of the ones where money's not going to a national level. There's no paid members. There's not a CEO. I mean, a lot of these organizations have people that are getting paid throughout. That doesn't happen with this one. So the money is going to a good cause and stays all local.
And then, of course, you know, that's happening in April. So if you want to just eliminate the thought of being not being able to get those tickets, you can go ahead and get in here and get those. Also, the Wyoming Walleye Stampede, the first round of applications is being accepted for those that are going to fish all three tournaments.
Right. So we've got a pretty good stack going already. I honestly haven't even opened up the envelopes, but I have a big stack on my desk. So March 7th or so, we'll start going through those and identifying which teams are signed up for all three. And then we'll draw those into position. And then, of course, if you're only looking at fishing one event or two events, get those applications in also. And then as we have room, we're going to go ahead and start drawing those guys into those other tournaments as well.
Yeah, and if you're thinking, well, I have until March to get this done. Well, you know, get it done early, because then that way you know that you're in for sure. Because that's kind of one of the things that's happened over the last couple of years is people get a little irritated if they can't get in.
Yeah, you know, and we've filled up on our, at least our Glendo event, the last couple of years. So best to get your applications in early and, you know, don't leave it to chance.
So obviously lots of things going on in the area this time of year where you can come by and get yourself stocked up on everything, whether it's clothing, boots, even the trekking poles and snowshoes. We have a good round of snow up on the mountain now, so guys are also getting out on their snowmobiles.
Yeah, I think the new Nordic Trail or Nordic Center is open now, so, I mean, be worth checking that out. They are definitely grooming trails up there, and according to my game cameras I have up there, there is plenty of snow falling.
It's funny because down here you don't ever really realize how much snow collects up there, because it's always 10 to 12, 15 degrees colder.
Right.
And snow will fall at that higher elevation more than it will here.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, next couple months, you know, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for snowshoeing, snowmobiling, you know, running your track machine around, whatever it is you're going to do. But, yeah, trekking poles and snowshoes, we can definitely get you set up there.
And make sure you have all those stickers that you're going to need for your ATVs and
snowmobiles.
Snowmobiles, yeah.
State park passes.
Yeah, you got to get all that stuff. And one of the other things I wanted to talk real quick was when it comes to when you're buying boots. My dad and I got into a conversation about this the other day, because it's a little different where he lives than it is here, because it gets cold and really cold.
Right.
When it comes to buying those boots, what are things that people need to look at? Because I know that there are different styles or different sizes, and, you know, what do people need to look at to keep their feet as warm as possible?
Well, I mean, making sure that you have a boot that's, not too tight is probably one of the biggest concerns. And then, you know, for me, you know, a lot of people complain about, you know, their feet sweating, you know, and then getting cold. So I typically have gone to wearing a better wool sock and not so thick of a sock, you know, so my feet can actually move and breathe in there. But, yeah, you know, there depends on kind of what you're doing in terms of which boot's best for you. If you're going to be in the snow, I mean, most of the time, then, you know, a rubber muck boot or bogs boot. In fact, I just picked up a pair of bogs that has like a minus 90 rating, and tested those out last week in the Goose Blind, and it was a real deal. They were good.
Didn't, in a situation like that, did you still wear the wool socks and just a thinner layer?
I did, yep. A thin layer of socks. And, you know, we're almost like a tree stand. You know, we're just not doing much moving around. So, the bogs, you know, and the mucks, you know, they've got some, you know, minus 50, minus 90 ratings that might be what you need.
And then another thing that we were talking about is the neoprene, because that's something that guys, if they're buying waders or, you know, the boots that have that material, and there are multiple layers on that too, and levels you can buy.
Yeah, and the wading boots, you know, we sell a lot of, you know, just spring fishing, so they're most of them aren't insulated. They're just a stocking boot where you can wear a wading shoe with it or a pair of tennis shoes with them. But, like, you know, this time of year, if you're duck hunting or, you know, doing anything in the water, you know, a neoprene pair of chest waders usually is really nice. And they do rank those by different millimeter thicknesses of neoprene. And then also the boots, you know, they can be anywhere from non-insulated all the way up to, I've seen, I think 1600 or 2000 grams of insulate.
Depending on the type of hunting or activity you're going to do is mm-hmm. what you need to do, just like with buying boots or even your clothes.
Yeah, in fact, this last week I found we were stocking a pair of Frog Togs wader pants, and they're just like they're almost like a pair of sweats, but they're fleece lined and they've got a little booty on the end, so like your foot doesn't slide up when you put your feet into your waders. Boy, and those were comfortable. They're nice.
It's interesting when you get into sizing of those because everybody's built a little differently. You know, some guys may have the broader shoulders like me, but not a high stature.
Right.
But then there are guys that, you know, are really thin and tall. So you got to make sure you try the ones that you're looking for.
Yeah, the waders come in all different sizes. You know, they have the tall and then they have the stout guys too. Yeah. So.
Well, get in here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. Check out all they have in stock. And don't forget, if you're heading out on the ATV, you got to get that ORV sticker. If you're going up for the snowmobiling, you got to get that. And the park pass is also available here. Check them out also at RockyMountainSports.com for all the items that they may or may not have in the store circuit.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian Woodward from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, and we're back talking some great things about Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, and we talked about some of the items you can get in stock here. One of the things that Rocky Mountain Discount Sports has that not a lot of other people have in the state of Wyoming, and that's a great firearm selection. And Brian, we've talked a lot over the years, if maybe you're looking for a new shotgun or a new rifle, you can go to the website first and just, you know, see what are there, and then come into the store to get a better option and opportunity to really handle that firearm.
Yeah, the website is fun. I mean, it gives a guy at least an opportunity to kind of look through potential inventory, but it doesn't necessarily, unfortunately, link to our in-store inventory. So you're going to find stuff that's on the website that's not in the store, but you're also going to find a bunch of stuff in the store that's not on the website. So it's kind of good to check both. And if you're, you know, searching on the internet and find something on our website that you like, I mean, you can certainly call the store and see if we have it in store. So if you want to touch it, feel it, play with it before you buy it, mm-hmm. It's a good opportunity. The website definitely has a lot of different stuff. I mean, there's so many 100,000 items on there, which we can't carry that many in the store. Right. So we can find those hard to find items for you that way.
Which and that's one of the great things about this too is it really is just another tool in the toolbox to help you find exactly what you're looking for. And if you don't have it in the store here, one of the other stores could have it, or you guys can get it from manufacturers, you know, in really easy time.
Yeah, I had a couple guns this week. In fact, a Colt Anaconda this morning. We had a gentleman looking for a 6-inch Anaconda. We had an extra one up in our Gillette store. So, you know, we'll have that down here tomorrow, you know, and we'll be able to take care of that customer. So with having four stores and the inventory levels at each store, we can find what you're looking for.
And another thing that I like about Rocky Mountain Discount Sports is the fact that when you walk in here, you're not pressured. First off, everybody's very kind and they're going to point you in the direction you want to go. But especially when it comes to the firearms, because, you know, if you're a guy that's maybe looking to upgrade or downgrade a little bit, you've got the selections and the biggest in the state.
I think, you know, the biggest concern for like a lot of us is just to make sure that you're putting the right firearm, you know, and, you know, kind of ask the questions, what are you looking for? Are you looking for high capacity? Are you looking for a single stack? Are you looking for something concealable? Do you want something you can put an optic on? You know, how are you going to carry it? What are the holster options? What's the magazine capacities? You know, we kind of try to ask those questions, you know, are you primarily just looking for self-defense, or are you wanting something that you can just go out every day and do some planking with? Because that's going to help maybe with ammunition choices and caliber choices. So, you know, hopefully, you know, people don't feel like they're pressured. You know, I some people are like, well, yeah, I walked by the gun counter and no one tried to sell me a gun or whatever. And I'm like, well, we're here, but we're not paid on commission. We're not here to high pressure sales you. But, you know, I mean, when you start looking at firearms and you start, you know, talking about, well, I want a good all-around gun to go big game hunting. Okay, well, what are you primarily going to be shooting? What kind of distance are you going to be shooting? More antelopes, more deer, or more elk? You know, here's the calibers are most popular. Here's the ones you're going to have a more difficult time finding ammunition for, and here's the other ones that you're going to find ammo wherever you go. So we're going to try to help you walk through some of those questions that maybe you hadn't really thought through very well.
Right, and that's another good point is when you walk in and it's a little bit overwhelming if you're not sure exactly what it is you're looking for. I mean, I can get on one wall and stay there for 45 minutes just because I'm like, okay, I like the pattern on that. I like the way this one feels. I like that. And you can try that, or you know, you can cut through all that mumbo jumbo and go right to the gun counter and be like, here's what I'm looking for. Point me in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of even more, like, especially with handguns, right? I mean, how's it going to fit your hand? You know, what's the angle of the grip? Do I like this style? Do I like that style? But, like, especially with shotguns, you know, everybody shoulders a shotgun a little bit differently. And, you know, when you pull it up and you can look down the rib of the gun and you can see the sight, and the sight pattern's good for you and it shoulders well. I mean, swing it. I mean, you can do that. I mean, like, we don't have these things, you know, tied to the walls where you can't, you know, play with them and see how they feel. So you can check out the weight, you can check out the swing, it's all right here.
And we were also talking, you know, you mentioned the handguns, and so my hands are a lot bigger than my wife's hands. And when she holds my guns, it's almost too big. Or if I hold one that's smaller, it's too small. And that kind of comes in to really help when people are like, I'm buying my first gun. I want this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to conceal and carry. So, you know, having that knowledge and knowledgeable people help you is big.
Yeah, I mean, we like to think that we're as helpful as we possibly can. And having the inventory in the store definitely makes it easier for a guy to or gal to touch and feel and see which one feels the best for them.
And you're always looking around to see what's popular, what's happening. There's the SHOT Show going on now, and you're heading to Dallas for a show here in a couple of weeks. So now is the time when all this new stuff is coming out. Are you seeing a lot of things that maybe you haven't seen in the past that are really going to be big?
Yeah, SHOT Show ended on Thursday, I think. And so, you know, throughout that whole week of dog and pony shows that the SHOT Show is, you know, my sales reps for each one of these categories, Browning, Fierce Firearms, when they released a gun, you know, they basically send that same information to us, you know, virtually, so that, you know, we have the opportunity to order those guns and be part of that SHOT Show without actually being there. And there's some pretty cool ones. There's a new Kel-Tec 5.7 that's going to be really cool. It's an internal magazine. It works off of stripper clips. And that one's going to be an interesting gun when we finally see that one. But like Browning's had a lot of different new, you know, SHOT Show editions. There's going to be some stuff trickling in all year long that's going to be pretty cool stuff.
And I know that you guys are always keeping an eye open, and there are multiple Rocky Mountain Discount Sports around this state. Obviously, we talked about this before, where things are different in Gillette than they are here. There's, mm-hmm. you know, and everywhere else around. Do you guys, like, have a conference call on, hey, this is looking good this year, are we going to try something like that, or is it store to store?
It is the buying is really strictly store to store. You know, we try to listen to our customers in our store and in our region, and you know, like, we all just kind of merchandise and order, you know, what we feel our customers in the area. So Boisen Reservoir is really close to Riverton, so they have a huge selection of ice shelters. I mean, like, mammoth ice shelters, stuff that I don't have room to display, but they have the market for it and they've got the customer base for it. So, you know, as you're traveling from store to, like, through city to city, town to town, and you see a different Rocky Mountain, I mean, you're going to probably be pretty surprised on the difference of product that each store carries.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, that comes also to ammo and what you're carrying for ammo, because if you're not carrying the firearm, it's very rare that you're going to have that ammo, but you could also get it too.
Yeah, and we, you know, of course, the guys behind our gun counter really like the older guns, you know, so some of those really, you know, oddball caliber stuff, whether it's 300 Savage or 30-40 Krag or 357 Roberts, you know, stuff that is really just not a common caliber around. We're trying to carry that stuff because we know that there's, you know, a bunch of old ranchers out here that have some guns or guns that have been passed down from generation to generation, and a guy just might want to go, you know, fire one off for grandpa once in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, something else you guys do, and I like this too, is if I have an old gun and I'd like to sell it, but, you know, it's really shady sometimes to put it on Facebook and whatever. It might get shut down like things have been here. Right. But you have a program that, you know, you can basically sell it here on consignment.
Yeah, we do have a consignment program. It's, you know, we charge 20%, but, you know, you get to name the price. And we'll throw it up on our shelf and we'll try to let as many people see it as possible, and we'll facilitate the 4473 and make sure the background check's going. You know, obviously you can sell guns, you know, person to person without too much of a problem, but you know, you just never know, you know, who you're selling to. Right. And so if you we even have helped people with just like you might bring a buddy in that says, hey, well, I'm going to sell this gun to him, but I'd like to you guys do the paperwork and transfer it to make sure that he's eligible to actually purchase. And so we can facilitate transfers even if it, you know, comes from another dealer like Palmetto State Armories. A lot of times they do like some special makeup guns. We can facilitate that transfer for $35 and we'll take care of all the paperwork.
So, and then you guys work with us with Thankful Thursday also. So, you know, you help the organization pick out the guns that they need, and then you will do all the paperwork the next day and mm-hmm. just make sure that it's all taken care of.
Yeah, and it just try to make the ease of those banquets and benefits smooth on those organizations. And, you know, if you're looking at doing a raffle or you've got a nonprofit that you're working with, we have a room that, you know, that we stash all that stuff in there. So, you know, when all these kids are selling Valor baseball tickets or hockey tickets and they're selling guns, those guns are usually just sitting back in a room ready for the winners. And then we'll process the paperwork when the winners pick out.
So it really is a great opportunity that, you know, it's just kind of a peaceful offering, you know, and kind of an added bonus here. And I did have a question from a guy that listened to the show a lot and wanted me to ask you is his dad is in North Carolina and his dad purchased a rifle and he wants to gift it to his son. Uh-huh. So to get it here, he wants to mail it. What's the process for somebody to do that?
Yeah, normally those guns would have to be transferred from FFL to FFL. He could probably ship it to us as the FFL, and then we would facilitate that transfer to his son. And it's not so bad coming to Wyoming, but like when we're sending guns out of the state, there's a lot of states, especially like even Colorado. Like right now, we currently can't sell to Colorado because they have a mandatory 3-day waiting period. So they also have a magazine restriction. California has a magazine restriction. I think they have a waiting period as well. Massachusetts has a trigger, a poundage restriction. I think it has to be 12-pound trigger on it. So transferring some of these guns to other areas is kind of tough. Obviously, you can only buy a handgun in the state that you live in. But if you happen to be passing through Wyoming or maybe you're in Rapid City for the weekend and you see a handgun that you want to purchase, they can sell it to you, but they can't just let you walk out with that gun. They would have to transfer that gun to an FFL dealer here in the area, and then we would have to facilitate the paperwork. And we're just making sure that that gun fits all the requirements that the state has put on us in terms of magazine restrictions, trigger pull restrictions, whatever else.
And that's if you're shipping it out, but it's pretty simple coming to Wyoming,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, coming to Wyoming, we don't have a whole lot of restrictions, so yeah. it's all pretty good.
So basically, all he would have to do is take it to an FFL in North Carolina, wherever he's living, and then get it shipped here?
They'd ship it here, we'd notify him once it got here, and then he'd come in and fill out paperwork.
So it really is a simple process that, you know, it's just
super
again,
easy. Yeah.
Just another added bonus of, you know, Rocky Mountain Discounts Board. So come on in, check them out. If you have questions like this, you can always hit us in our app and ask those questions, or come by and see Brian and all the gang here at Rocky Mountain Discounts Sports.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.